Like many of you, I had big plans going into 2020. None of them involved being locked inside my house for months with no seeming end in sight. Even being cooped up with my best friends didn't make it better. My friends Matt, Amar, and I run a YouTube channel called Yes Theory. It's how we make a living. But we've always believed that Yes Theory was more than a YouTube channel. It's a social movement based on the shared value of seeking discomfort. We believe that the most meaningful connections with ourselves and others happen when we step outside of our comfort zones. And it's way bigger than Matt, Amar, and I. As 2019 came to a close, we thought, how could we do more? Do better. We plotted out some initiatives to bring you closer to discomfort. A live event series, some stellar partnerships, and ambitious programming. But one by one, they all got canceled.
The NBA have just announced that they are suspending play.
Tom Hanks and his wife got tested. They have coronavirus.
All LA County beaches, boardwalks, and trails closed.
But we tried to look on the bright side. We tried to think of new ways to still bring you closer to discomfort. Amar thought that the lockdown was the perfect opportunity to revisit what launched our channel, Project 30, where we made a new video every single day for 30 days.
I just thought we had an amazing opportunity to show that seeking the internal discomfort is just as powerful, if not even more powerful, than all the external discomforts that we chase.
Matt took this as a sign from the universe that maybe after building our channel for 5 years straight, we should take a break.
I just want to stop. I don't want to think about videos. This is like the only opportunity we'll ever get to just fully stop and reflect. And we can't waste it.
I didn't want to do either of those things during lockdown. Instead, I wanted to go on a treasure hunt.
Oh my God, this is like every child fantasy actually coming to life.
I heard about the story of a millionaire art dealer named Forrest Fenn who decided to bury some of his valuables after being diagnosed with terminal cancer. He wrote a book that held clues to the treasure in a cryptic poem and said it was anywhere between Santa Fe, New Mexico, where Fenn lives, and the Canadian border. Whoever found the treasure got to keep it. Thousands of people have gone hunting, and there are hundreds of theories about where the treasure is. So as soon as I heard about it, I had to go after it too. Plus, traipsing through the Rocky Mountains on a remote treasure hunt still counted as social distancing, right? I called in the Yes Theory production team to film our search, and we got to work.
Some people like devote their lives to this. Like they're retired and this is all they do. Or like their family trips to this.
That's one of our channel producers, Lauren.
There's a bunch of bears, but I guess we'll figure that out.
Bears?
Yeah.
There's bears?
Yeah, you have to have like bear spray and stuff.
Yeah, but I didn't think there would be bears.
With any great journey comes great risk.
Clearly, I needed all the help I could get. Luckily, there were experts who organized all the insights gathered on Fenn's treasure so far. And that's how I got to talking with Dal Neitzel. Dal runs a blog that documents everything anyone knows about where to find Fenn's treasure. Even though we were just starting our journey, the web of Fenn's mystery was so thick, we weren't all that far behind people who'd already been searching for 10 years.
Thank you so much for talking to us. We're just at the beginning of our searcher's journey, and we're lucky to be able to get in contact with you.
As soon as Dal started talking... His feet cuts out. This is the way of 2020, isn't it? You make a plan, and you watch that plan get stomped out into embers. We weren't so easily deterred. We eventually got to talk to Dal.
Well, you guys have fun. That's what it's all about.
We booked an RV and set a course, but 2 weeks before we hit the road...
Sunday, Fenn confirmed his treasure chest has been found.
He says the person found it in just the last few days and sent photos as proof.
Someone found the freaking treasure. 2 weeks before we left to search for ourselves, 10 years after thousands of people had tried, someone finally found it. I won't lie, I was beyond devastated. And while I was certain that 6 months ago I would have taken a hit like this in stride, during the pandemic, it just felt unbearable. It was nothing at all to do with the treasure hunting, and everything to do with how every single plan, no matter how big or small, had inevitably been ruined. 2020 has made it clear that you can't plan for the future right now. You just have to sit in the everyday uncertainty. And that hurts. Like physically, it gives me stomach aches. What's life when you just take it day by day? What's life when you live on grand plans that you can't take any concrete steps towards? When memories of the time before fade and you have nothing but a phantom memory of what life once felt like? The pandemic has unlocked an unyielding, all-consuming uncertainty like a fog that blurs all hopes for the future. While we at Yes Theory claim to be the discomfort guys, I'll admit that I'm less enthusiastic about this kind of vast uncertainty. Seeking out discomfort is intentionally challenging, but this is next level. So when I realized that the podcast, which had been a dream for a while, was actually something we could do safely during the pandemic, I knew exactly where to start. With a gnawing feeling that haunts my day-to-day, uncertainty. From Headspace Studios, I'm Thomas Bragg.
I'm Amar Candio.
And I am Matt Daher.
This is the Yes Theory Podcast. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
You decided to upgrade your outdoor deck. So you ordered the essentials: a power washer, a set of patio chairs, and a shiny new grill. And you used your Bank of America Cash Rewards credit card, choosing to earn 3% cash back on online shopping, or up to 5.25% as a preferred rewards member, which you put towards the cost of your most essential deck addition, a bird feeder. Apply for yours at bankofamerica.com/more rewarding. Copyright 2020 Bank of America Corporation.
Along the Yes Theory journey, we've been very lucky to meet fantastic experts who study everything from kindness to burnout to virality and risk perception. We usually don't have a ton of time in our videos to go deep into those topics, but the podcast seemed like the perfect place for it. So when I was close to being totally and completely leveled by the bleak uncertainty of modern life, Yes Theory's very own Matt Daher knew who to call. Ozan Varol. Literal rocket scientist turned author turned law professor at Lewis and Clark University turned free agent by choice during this pandemic.
I don't know if you've heard about this COVID situation, but we're in a very, very interesting time right now where uncertainty is the name of the game.
So in moments of uncertainty, like the one we're currently in, we tend to try to control things that cannot be controlled, and then we don't control the things that are within our control, which is sort of a paradox, right? And I think from a rocket science perspective, this is true for astronauts and then the engineers and scientists working on the ground. The goal is to focus on what you can control and forget about the rest. So I was just looking ahead at the next year, the next 2 years, and thinking through whether I want to keep doing what I'm doing in terms of my day job and in academia. And I made the decision to leave. A lot of my colleagues think I'm crazy because, I have tenure. That's job security for life. I mean, unless I do something really stupid, I have a guaranteed paycheck for life. And so why would I give that up, right? Why would I launch myself into the unknown instead of relying on the safety net?
But this wasn't the first time he'd done something like that.
Before I made the decision, I mean, and even to this day sometimes, like, there'll be a voice going off in my head being like, what are you doing? You have become a professional quitter, right? Like, you're a rocket scientist. You left that to practice law. You left that to become a law professor. And now you're leaving again.
We're going to let Ozan tell you why he launched himself into the unknown like an astronaut. But first, it's important to point out that Ozan's perspective is a rare one, a privileged one. If the pandemic has illuminated anything, it has affirmed the value of the essential workers who have been overlooked and undervalued for too long. And for many nowadays, a weekly pay stub, essential or not, is less guaranteed than ever before. But to Ozan, that wasn't enough to justify staying.
My mind kept going to the snake. So the snake is the ancient symbol of transformation. And the snake, unlike other animals, the skin on a snake doesn't grow as the animal grows. So the snake's insides actually outgrow its outsides. And the animal, at some point in its life, reaches a point where the older skin has to be discarded in favor of the new. And I felt very much like that, that the old skin that I've been wearing for a while was constraining. And there was like new skin growing inside, but it couldn't fully emerge because it was completely constrained by what I had been wearing for the past 10 years. And by the way, to be honest, like, there is a lot of ego involved here too. Whenever you are being rewarded for something, it's so hard to walk away from it, right? Because it's, your ego just kicks and screams.
But even when you know something isn't a good fit, you can still be comfortable. Leaving with little idea of what's on the other side just seems too risky.
Well, if you actually look up uncertainty in the dictionary, it says it's the same thing as risk, but it's completely different.
That's Arthur Brooks. He teaches about happiness at Harvard, and during the pandemic, he launched an Atlantic column called How to Build a Life.
Uncertainty is what we experience when we don't know what the possibilities are. You know, when you walk into a situation, you don't know what's going to happen, and there's no way of figuring that out, and so you can't assign probabilities to the outcomes. That's uncertainty, and it's incredibly uncomfortable. So this kind of gets to the motto of Yes Theory.
And what Ozan was getting at.
Why do you think people are so afraid of the uncertainty? In the book, you talk about the drunk man and the lamp.
Yes.
And the light versus the dark.
Totally, yeah. And for those who are not familiar with that story, it's the fable of the drunk guy who's looking for his keys under the street lamp. Police officer comes and asks the drunk guy, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm looking for my keys. And then the police officer says, well, where did you lose them? And the drunk guy says, points to a dark corner of the street. And then the police officer is miffed and he says, well, why are you looking for them under the street lamp? And he says, well, that's where the light is. And so that is emblematic of what happens to so many of us. Like, we do what we do, not because it's optimal, but because we've done it before, because it feels safe. Because that's where the street lamp is. This is what we know. And we don't want to venture into the dark corner of the street because the dark is scary to many of us.
Which is totally normal and biological. Facing uncertainty is essential for personal growth, but it's natural for it to feel uncomfortable. Humans evolved to fear the unknown as a survival mechanism.
Because when you don't know what the possible outcomes are, they could be catastrophic.
That's Arthur again.
And that gives you fear. Fear stimulates the amygdala, which is a part of your brain that governs natural fear. And what happens if you're in this chronic situation of uncertainty is that you're stimulating your amygdala all the time.
Which means your body thinks you're constantly under stress. It can't tell the difference between stress and distress, so it keeps pumping out cortisol, which makes you feel even worse about the uncertainty.
And you can't quite define it. You just know you're really uncomfortable. You don't sleep well. Your hunger is all off. You're grumpy. You're out of sorts. And that means you have to find a better way.
Arthur says when we're unsure about our circumstances, we often cope by trying to avoid them. Or we seek out information so we can make good decisions and be less uncertain. During the pandemic, that mostly means sticking our heads into the sand or doing a lot of doom scrolling.
Neither one of those is going to work.
So what's the better way?
You start by acknowledging what's going on. Look, I can't tell you what's going to happen. It's unknowable what's going to happen right now. So therefore, I have to find a better way to deal with it. And the best way to deal with it is basically the same way that an oncologist one time told me he deals with his patients.
Arthur had a friend whose entire job was telling people that they had terminal cancer. He would break the news, and all of his patients would go home and Google their illnesses. They'd come back into their next appointment totally overwhelmed by the life expectancy statistics. And even though they were overloaded, they couldn't stop looking things up. They were searching for any sort of information that would make them feel better. And Arthur's friend, the oncologist, would tell them,
"Don't do that. Because you're not going to be satisfied. You're not going to get information. You can't be done." And so he tells this to his patients. A very beautiful thing. I don't know what's going to happen next week. I don't know what's going to happen next month or next year. But I do know that I am alive and well today, and I refuse to waste the gift that is this day. And that's what we need to do. Every day, start the day saying, I don't know what's going to happen today. I don't know when I'm going to get back to work the way I used to. I don't know when I'm going to get to travel again. I don't know. I don't know what the world's going to look like 6 months from now, but today is a gift, and I will not waste this gift. I will not express the ingratitude that comes from spending 2 hours looking at the media. It's not right. Mm. I'm going to be fully alive today. I'm going to earn my success today. I'm going to serve others today. And then uncertainty can be actually an experience for growth and not just an experience for pain.
Wow. So it ultimately comes down to gratitude.
Yeah, well, most things do. Ultimately, if you say I refuse to waste the gift, that is another way of saying I refuse to be ungrateful. Mm. For the gift that is this day. And we all should be thinking about that all the time. I mean, the key is on coronavirus epidemic or any inconvenience that you face is that you got to be an entrepreneur about your life, right? I mean, your life is your only real startup. I mean, everybody talks about, I mean, you've started this business, you know, you've got this podcast and it's successful and it's great, but your real startup is you, is like You Inc. That's the enterprise of life.
For that startup, we have one opportunity to get it right. That's it. So now, jumping into the unknown looks a little less risky, right? Here's Ozan again.
The things that have had the most positive impact on my life have been subtractions. So getting rid of things, creating more open space for me to like think and write and explore. And if you're not intentional about subtracting, about creating space, it's so easy to fill your life with meetings that you don't need to attend, emails that you don't need to write, cars that you don't need to own, junk that fills up your drawers that you don't need. And all of that physical and mental clutter takes up space, and that you don't leave room in your brain basically for new ideas to emerge. My thoughts go back to this poem that I love from Donna Markova. It's called I Will Not Die an Unlived Life. And she says, I choose to risk my significance so that what comes to me as seed can go to the next as blossom. And so whenever I'm afraid of making a leap, her voice comes to me as an echo from my subconscious, just reminding me that I've got nothing to lose. And that phrase, I choose to risk my significance, is something that I go back to on a fairly regular basis.
So that begs the question, what are you willing to risk your significance for? We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, this podcast is produced by Headspace Studios. Headspace has thousands of hours of meditation content. The best tool you have is your mind, so take care of it.
A lot of our audience are 18 to 24 year olds. If you were them, how would you approach this next year?
So it's an adverse situation, to be sure. And, you know, there's no reason to sugarcoat it. The key thing that I notice for people who are 18 to 24 is that I actually see in the data a huge amount of fear, a much higher level than we've seen in previous generations. And it manifests itself in all sorts of different ways. You see that for high school seniors, they're 30 percentage points less likely to date than high school seniors were when I graduated from high school. You never see data like this. As a social scientist, it's just really mind-blowing. You also see that people in their 20s are about a third less likely to be in love than people were when I was in my 20s. The reason for that appears to be there's this fear of repudiation. Parents who have kids in this age range have been protecting them from all adversity. And right now you've got this really adversive situation, then set about to a task in the next year of taking more risk. Like that's the zeitgeist of your podcast. Be uncomfortable. Part of being uncomfortable is not feeling entirely safe. Now, the best way to feel unsafe, here's my therapy. Don't like, you know, ride around without a seatbelt. Don't do that. Don't practice, you know, unsafe sex or take drugs. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying fall in love. That's the ultimate entrepreneurial act, and it's super dangerous. Why? Because you could get rejected. It's funny. I actually gave this advice to this group of people in their 20s who were working on Capitol Hill. And this guy, he saw the speech that I gave, and he weirdly ran into me on an airplane a couple weeks later. And he says, you gave that speech about, you know, being a life entrepreneur by expressing my love, man. I said, yeah. He says, so I'm on my way to express my love to a girl I've been in love with. I never saw her for 2 years. I gave my email. So I said, let me know how it turns. I didn't hear from him. I run into him 3 months later in Washington, D.C., and I remember this guy's face. I go up to him. I said, remember me? He says, yes. I'm like, ugh. I said, how did it turn out? He says, she shot me down. I said, I'm so sorry. He says, no, I've been meaning to email you and thank you. I said, why? He says, because the worst thing that could possibly happen happened, and I didn't die, and I'm not afraid anymore. Mm. Think about that. How do you actually build up strength? You're the discomfort guy. Tell me.
Exposure. Yeah.
Exposure therapy. Exactly right. By the way, that's pure psychotherapeutic gold. If you're afraid of snakes, I'm going to make you hold a snake. If you're afraid of planes, I'm going to take you into the sky. If you're afraid of rejection, you need to declare your love.
At Yes Theory, we're all about exposure therapy. We have skydived, backflipped, and dated our fears away. But right now, my biggest fear is still just the uncertainty of it all. And exposure therapy may not even be relevant in dealing with it.
Uncertain situations will find you. I mean, you actually don't have to work very hard. But when they're there, you don't avoid them, right? You don't actually try to neutralize them. You lean into them. You express gratitude for them. I'm not going to neutralize this. I can't. So you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to feel the uncertainty. I'm going to think about the uncertainty. I'm going to roll it around in my hands. I'm going to get dirty with this uncertainty a little bit. And it's crazy because once you own that, you feel strong, you feel good, and you're ready for the next thing.
I'd like to tell you that I'm already plotting out a new treasure hunt, but I think 2020 is demanding we sit in that uncertainty for a little while longer. What we've learned from Ozan and Arthur is that this is the time to stare down the dissatisfactions and uncertainties that we've been avoiding for a long time. Instead of confessing your love or taking on a wild adventure during this pandemic, consider what Ozan said again.
Often, subtracting is actually adding. And I'm prouder of the things that I stopped doing in my life as opposed to the things that I have done.
What aspects of your life suddenly felt excessively burdensome or toxic at the outset of this pandemic? Every episode, we're going to initiate a challenge, pushing you to wrestle with some internal discomforts. For this week, we're challenging you to be intentional about subtracting from your life. Share your decision with us on Instagram by tagging at YesTheory and using the hashtag YesTheoryChallenge. And with that, we'll leave you with some wise words from a treasure hunting mentor, Dal.
Like most of the searchers say, you know, it isn't just about the treasure. If it was just about the treasure, I'd stop because I'm not finding it and I don't feel like I'm close. It's about the fun. And I find lots of little treasures when I'm out looking for the big treasure. You know, I mean, smell the sunshine. That's what it's all about.
I'm your host for this episode, Thomas Bragg, but I would not be here without my friends Matt Daher and Amar Kandil. This episode was produced by Joy Folks and Juliette Luini. It was edited by Joey Fishground. Dan Kroll sound designed and mixed it right up. The Yes Theory podcast is produced by Kate Ward for One Day Entertainment. The executive producers are Leah Sutherland, Morgan Seltzer, and Sam Rogaway from Headspace Studios.